Session number 4438, Reel 1.
Mrs. Davis, Reel 1. I think it would be important to go back before the war a bit, to your family in Germany. I should think you must have been affected very quickly by Hitler's takeover because of your father losing his job.
Yes.
Could you tell me about your family situation in the 30s?
Yes, well, I must explain, first of all, that my father was an ordinary German, what was called an Aryan German, and my mother was of Jewish origin. And my father was a member of the Liberal Party, what corresponds to the Liberal Party in this country. And he was very opposed to Nazi ideas. And he lost his job, in fact, very early on. He had a civil service appointment. He was a consultant in a hospital in Berlin. And he was dismissed from his job for political reasons in April 1933, which was very early on, very soon after Hitler got to power. And from then onwards, my father could only work in private practice. And my mother, who practiced in general practice in medicine, lost her job in the summer of 1935. But that was a secondary stage. I think for political reasons, we were in trouble really right from the beginning, so to speak. I myself, I think I told you, was thrown out of a school in Berlin when I was, I believe, 16 for so-called political reasons. And the headmasters in those days were politically such cowards already, as I told you, that my father approached several of them to see if another grammar school would take me. And after they refused, I was sent to a boarding school in the south of Germany where my brother had been before me. My brother then left Germany. He didn't wish to do military service, which was by this time compulsory by the time he finished school in 1935. And he didn't wish to go to the compulsory Arbeitsdienst. This was a six-month period in those days of practical work in camps, which was compulsory for those who wanted to go on to higher education, to the university in this case. So although my brother, like myself, started at a German university in Berlin, he very soon realized it. He wasn't eligible for exams in the same way, as it was made clear to me afterwards. And he had the good luck to be able to leave Germany under the auspices of the International World Student Organization, I think it's called, and they had a committee dealing with refugee students. And so my brother came to England, to Scotland, in fact, as a refugee student, so to speak, in 1935.
And what made him choose Scotland? Or was that
That was really a coincidence. He wasn't in a position to choose at all. He was told that the Scottish University, St. Andrews, was prepared to offer him a free place. And the refugee committee for refugee students in Scotland happened to have a secretary living in St. Andrews who was a physicist, and my brother, or mathematician, I'm sorry, and my brother did mathematics as his main subject at St. Andrews, so he was advised to start there, and that is in fact where he lived until he died as the result of an accident in the mountains in Scotland in December 1937.
Yes. You and your two sisters were still in Berlin.
At that time. Yes, we were. And after my brother had died, the refugee committee in St. Andrews were instrumental in bringing my two younger sisters to Scotland. And they, one sister left in 38 to go to St. Andrews, to a boarding school in St. Andrews. And a month or two later, my younger sister left Berlin and also to go to the same school. And both my younger sisters were, as it were, under the protection and with the support of the refugee organization in Scotland, in St. Andrews. It was a Dr. Rutherford who was the secretary of this committee, and he looked after them in a way.
That must have been a very difficult decision for your parents to send the three of you away, particularly after your brother had died.
Well, yes, thinking back, I think it was very courageous of them to send the rest of us, particularly as when we left, and I didn't leave until March 39, one couldn't take any money at all, and we just came with a suitcase as we stood up, really. And both my sisters were very fortunate in friends they made at school, and various friends invited them to their homes for holidays, and their life started in that way. I myself came in quite a different way, as I think I told you.
I'm surprised that your parents didn't leave, though I think you told me your father certainly tried.
Yes, my father made one serious effort to leave Germany, but relatively late in 38. He spent some time in England and in Scotland trying to see if there was any job that he could do, any place that might be offered him. But of course he thought in terms of supporting his family, and there was no job offered to him which would have made that possible. There was talk of my mother coming, but she would have had to begin at the bottom of her training as a general nurse. There was talk about this, but my parents hesitated, and well, then it was too late.
Did they contact any refugee organizations?
I don't think so. My father was certainly in touch with the refugee organization in Scotland who had looked after my brother. In fact, they stayed in this Dr. Rutherford's house. My mother had come to visit my brother once before she lost her passport and stayed with this Dr. Rutherford, and Dr. Rutherford's wife once spent a holiday with my parents in Germany. So she knew, they knew my family, and I had met the Rutherfords before. But I think my father made contact with medical people in his branch of medicine, which was gynecology. And I don't think that he made contact with any official refugee organization in any other way. And this contact in Scotland was really on behalf of my brother and my two young sisters who were brought out by them.
Can you describe to me what it was like in Germany in the 30s before you got out? You told me, of course, that you had to leave your school. How did it affect you in your daily life?
It affected every hour of one's life, really. The politics pervaded everything. And all one's, I mean, I was a child in those days, and all one's friendships turned round whether the other people were Nazis or weren't, and one's relations in school and with teachers and so on also turned around these sort of things. One offered what opposition one could in refusing to take part in school assemblies where Nazi songs were sung and things of that sort. But of course we were children, and our political activities were really those of very young people. My parents' life was profoundly affected, of course. All their own friends were people who were as violently and passionately opposed to Nazis as they themselves were.
Some people say that nobody in Germany knew what was going on until it was too late.
Well, I've often heard this, but I myself can't believe it. As I said to you, I think anybody who could read and write must have known what was going on. It's very difficult to believe that people can't have known. It was so all-pervasive, it was impossible not to know. And it affected even the activities of school children. I remember, quite small things. I happened to be very good at sport, and quite soon one wasn't eligible anymore to represent one's school at sport events and things of that sort, simply because one was not an Aryan. It was a small thing, but it affected everything. The reason I was thrown out of my school turned round an essay I had written, an idiotic title for an essay was set by the German master, What is a Hero? I remember. And I had a friend whose father was a minister in the Christian church, and he was later belonged to the Bekenntniskirche, which was opposed to Nazis, of course. But at this time, he had refused to give the oath, as ministers of the church were required to do. That must have happened just in 1936, because it was absolutely uppermost in my mind. And I chose to write my essay, What is a Hero?, about this father of my friend, saying that to me is a hero, a man who refuses for his beliefs to make such an oath, and yet he realized and must have realized the consequences, that from then onwards he couldn't support his five children anymore. And that was a great exception was taken to this, because it was my friend in the form, a woman with whom I've remained friendly to this day.
Did she leave Germany as well?
They didn't. The father was killed and lost his life. And the children stayed in Germany, of course, but we took up our friendship after the war, and she's visited us several times since. We've kept in close touch, really. Since then, of course, throughout the Boer years, one lost contact with all one's friends in Germany, naturally. There was no way of keeping in touch.
Where were you at the time of the Kristallnacht?
I was in Berlin. I remember it very clearly. I remember going out with one of my young sisters to see one of the synagogues near our home in flames, and it was a terrible period. Because my mother's sister, who was Jewish and worked for a Jewish organization in Berlin, for the Jewish headquarters in Berlin, and she was politically very active. And, of course, all one's conversations turned round what was happening to the Jews and what terrible things the Nazis thought up. Not just the Jews, but what the political situation and how it worsened from month to month.
How religious were your family?
No, my parents themselves were not married in church, and none of us belonged to a church, and my mother did not come of a Jewish Orthodox family, although several generations before her own father had been a doctor in Berlin, but several generations before that there were rabbis in Jewish community, but my mother certainly was not Orthodox. Nor were any of our friends, really, our Jewish friends in Berlin. I don't think I met any Orthodox Jews until I came to live in England, and until, really, as I told you a moment ago, my son became very friendly with children of refugees at school, several of whom were, in fact, Orthodox Jewish. But I myself, I don't think, had ever actually met Orthodox Jews until that time.
It must be particularly frustrating to be prosecuted for belonging to a religion that isn't really an important part of your life. About you, your religion. look here, your grandfather was...
Yes, well, clearly it didn't irrelevant. Turn around the religious aspect of Judaism, but simply it was simply a racial aspect, wasn't it? And Jews were equally persecuted, whether they were Orthodox or had become members of the Christian Church, as quite a number of them had done. My mother was not one of them, because my parents were not religious in that sense at all themselves, but that was no safeguard. You must have heard of many Jewish people. I knew quite a number. Here in Ealing, I was friendly with an old woman till she died, who they had been members of the Christian Church since she was married, I think, and of course that was no protection. I think there was a famous saying that Göring once is supposed to have made, who is a Jew, I decide. And that, I don't know if you've heard this, and that it was as arbitrary as that.
How much did you know about Britain before you came here? You would perhaps have an advantage in having your brother have been...
Well, yes, that, of course, was a contact. And we had always, for political reasons, my father admired Britain very much. And when Hitler came to power and when things went from bad to worse, and when Hitler built up the German army and when he took over the Rhineland against all agreements, militarily took it over. And so my father always, in a naive sort of way, thought this could not last, it would not last, and Britain would not allow Hitler to do so and so. But I'm afraid Britain came to their senses too late. And they allowed to gain a good deal. Also, when you ask me how much did I know about England, I had the good fortune to go to a school for the last few years of my life in Germany, a school which had very close ties with England, and which I suppose was built on the model of English public schools. The school I went to in Germany later gave rise to Gordonson, the headmaster of Salem, the school I went to. A man, Kurt Hahn, I don't know if you know his name, left Germany after a period of internment. He was released on condition he left Germany, and he came to Scotland, where he had many friends, and he himself had been at Oxford in his student days, and he admired England very much. And his Scottish friends helped him to start another school in Scotland, which became Gordonson. And I had quite close ties with Gordonson. My brother spent practically all his university vacations at Gordonson. We knew Hahn very well, because Hahn happened to be a friend of my family. And I remember meeting him before I ever went to Salem myself, because he was friendly with my grandmother, my father's mother, and I remember meeting him in her house in Berlin. And I myself also spent quite two vacations, I think, at Gordonston. Once before I came to live in Scotland, because I'd come to see my brother to spend a holiday with him at Gordonston before I ever came to live in Scotland. It was still possible. My passport seemed to enable me to come and go back. And later I spent a good deal at Gordonston while I was a student in Scotland. And afterwards I was in touch with Hahn. Well, practically until he died, although he went back to Germany after his retirement.
Your parents having lost their jobs, it must have been difficult for them to pay for your education.
Well, financially, our situation must have been very difficult, thinking back, although as a child one wasn't so conscious of it. But I know that I myself was given a free place, or as good as a free place, in Zaarlem when I went there. And one of my sisters spent almost a year at Zaarlem before she left to go to Scotland. And because my father wasn't able to pay the fee, Zaarlem were willing to take us. I believe my father repaid them later when he was able to earn again after the war. But that was our situation, certainly.
How well did you speak English before you came here?
Very badly. I was never very good at languages at school, and I think my English must have been dreadful. I was very lucky, in a way, being able to keep up with lectures at the university in Glasgow from the beginning, because I happened to have learned in the year before I left Germany and after I gave up my medical studies, I went to a secretarial college for people who had sort of post-A-level, what would correspond to post-A-level here. And this course was quite an intensive one for secretaries who learned to type and do shorthand, not just in German, but French and English as well. And I had the good fortune to be able to write English shorthand. And this was an immense help, because I was able to take down the lectures almost verbatim, and then had to spend a great deal of time at night sorting out what these words meant, and with the help of a dictionary, I was able to keep up. And of course, once you live in a country, it's really only a matter of a few months before you feel perfectly at home in the language, even though it may still have been a very shaky command of the language. One wasn't conscious of it anymore.
Even though you started medical studies in Germany.
Yes.
I believe you said you weren't able to continue.
Yes, that is quite right. I didn't realize it when I started. After my Abitur in Zaarlem, I went to do the 6 months compulsory Arbeitsdienst because I wanted to do medicine, and there was no other way of doing it, of course. And when I had completed almost a year of medicine at Berlin, one had to enroll for the first exams, and it was only then made plain to me that although I was at liberty to attend lectures, I wasn't eligible to sit exams. And I remember my father going with me, because both my parents had done their medical studies largely at Berlin. He went with me to see the dean of the medical faculty, but of course there was no way of altering the so-called law that had been made, that non-Aryans were not eligible for examinations. And it's then that I gave it up and went to one of these secretarial colleges for a year. And immediately, the moment I'd finished there, I was ready to come to Scotland. I would have much preferred myself continuing medicine, but the people who supported me financially, the British Federation of University Women, who were instrumental in bringing me to Scotland, felt that medicine was a relatively long course, and if you broke it off halfway through, you had no qualifications at all. Whereas in science, there was a way of taking an ordinary degree, which in Scotland took only 3 years, whereas an honours degree took 4 in Scottish universities. So I enrolled as a science student initially for an ordinary degree. And then when the time came and these kind old ladies who supported me were able to continue, I was able to take an honours degree eventually, and I went into zoology as the nearest to medicine.
How did you come to know about Dr. Melville and the association?
The British Federation of University Women. That was through Zaarlem. I had a tutor in Zaarlem, the woman who was in charge of the girls at Zaarlem, who had very close ties with England and had been a student herself in St. Andrews in her young days. And she happened to know Dr. Melville very well. Dr. Melville was at this time the president of the British Federation of University Women. She was really in retirement by the time I got to know her. She had been the principal of the Women's University at Glasgow before women became officially members of the university in Glasgow. So in Scottish circles, in Scottish academic circles, Dr. Melville was very well known. And my tutor from Salem approached her late in 38 or very early in 39, I can't remember. I think it was in December 38 she went to Scotland and to England and made contact with Dr. Melville, and they decided to help me get out of England. And that is, in fact, how I came. I hadn't met Dr. Melville myself at this time, but later I became very friendly with her and lived in her cottage in Kirkcudbrightshire very often and kept up close contact with her until she died eventually.
Were there any other German students coming at the same time with you?
Not at all. I didn't know of any. The British Federation of University Women sponsored several women. I met a very remarkable young woman. She was older than I was, but still quite a young woman, an economist who had been brought out of Germany for political reasons by the British Federation of University Women. And we too, this woman and myself, were Dr. Melville's proteges, as it were, and we became friendly on the Isle of Man. But this woman later, I believe, left England with her husband, who was also an economist. I think he became a political journal later, a political journalist later. I heard him sometimes on the wireless and so on. But I came really quite alone, and in my years in Glasgow had almost no contact with refugees at all. There was one friend of my family, a medical woman, who came to live in Glasgow a short time after I arrived there. She was a dermatologist in Germany, but she started training as a nurse from the bottom, and I'm afraid she was really completely broken and shattered by her experiences and that of her only brother and his wife and child being taken in Holland, arrested by the Nazis and taken to a camp. So our friendship initially really consisted in part, at least, in my giving her support, as it were. She was much in need of it at the time. But I've kept in close contact with her all my life, of course.